call it? Are we calling our recent hiatus, our recent break? Are we calling it maternity leave?
Sure, it could be maternity leave. Break.
Break from life. It sounds like we've had a baby together, and we haven't.
Yeah, but you just talking to yourself would have been a little much. As much as I love listening to your voice, it might have been a little much for the listeners every week.
It just wouldn't have been interesting, would it? Me sort of rambling on about something, everyone would be like, Naomi, you need to have a chat with her. So we'll call it maternity leave because everyone will know that at the start of this year, or a little bit into this year, you had little one number two. So yes. Lots of things involved with going from one to two children, as you've discovered. and I think on both our parts, parents, we both have aging parents with some needs that are getting a little bit more urgent, extreme, not sure. So I think life became, we weren't even talking as much, were we? I mean, it wasn't like we're still having hour-long chats every week.
Oh yeah, no. Just other things just sort of took priority as it goes, and it's always a combination of things, isn't it? It wasn't just the baby, but as you said, other people to look after as well. So just a lot of life juggle is what it is.
I'm feeling very grown up right now.
That's it. Really? No, right. Life got in the way, but anyway, we're back. We're here, and good news is the tennis season didn't stop.
Well, it never does. As we've said before, never it doesn't even stop. Does. It doesn't even stop when it's meant to stop, because that's when they go off. And again, we understand this. They're freelancers, they're contractors. They go and do the exhibitions. And everyone says, why are they doing exhibitions? They're tired. Yes, but if someone's saying, I don't know, to Nick Kyrgios, come to the Middle East and earn X million for playing two sets of tennis, who's saying no to that? I'm saying yes to that.
Yeah, it really doesn't tire them out. We've talked about exhibitions before. They're not proper matches.
No.
So it really doesn't. Sometimes they'll be on the beach in the morning and they'll just rock up to the exhibition at 5 p.m, have a little hit just to warm up a bit and play. They're not going through that. You know, that's the thing, is because being a tennis player, you know, people just see the hours that you're on the match court for. But that's... Yep. That's such a tiny part of what you do. It's 24 hours a day. So when you go and play exhibitions, you're still not on for 24 hours a day. You literally are just doing the couple of hours and that's about it. So it's totally different.
Oh, I love that. And we should say that while the life juggle has been taking place, we have continued to work. And once again, obviously. So we were both asked to work recently on the Billie Jean King Cup Finals qualifiers. It gets longer, doesn't it? It gets longer. So we were both asked to work on it. And it was like, great, are we going to work together? Of course we're not going to work together. Why on earth would someone put us two together on a match or a tie? Just didn't happen. Didn't happen. Weren't together. And not only were we not together, there were two ties overnight, two ties during the day. We weren't even in the same time zone.
No, exactly. I was overnight, you were during the day. So we didn't see each other at all, even though we were probably in the same booth. So there you go.
Oh yes, when you go down that corridor, were you on the left or the right?
Right.
You know, when you look at you, were, oh no, I was on the left.
Oh.
I was on the left. So we were in a different booth, but I was doing Spain, Mexico during the day.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful Marbella, sunshine, sort of mountain in the background, palm trees.
Lovely.
Just that was absolutely beautiful. And you were. Were you with the USA through the night?
I was with the USA through the night. Delray Beach, which was it started off a little bit sketchy because they did the big American build-up. They called everybody onto court, you know, they did the names. I mean, they do it in Billie Jean King Cup at all the ties, but, you know, the Americans really give it some. And everybody came on with their flags and they were all stood there and the anthems were just about to start. And then the announcer... came on, and it was so funny because it was in the same tone that she'd been announcing everything. You know Blair doing that. She does a lot of the American emceeing on the courts, loads of the interviews. All tennis fans will have heard Blair speaking to players. And so she had this specific tone that she was announcing the players in. And in the exact same tone, she just said, ladies and gentlemen, please evacuate the stadium. There's lightning in the area. And you thought she was saying, ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the national anthem. So everyone was very confused because, you know, it was spitting a little bit. But, you know, in Florida, lightning's no joke. If there's lightning within, I think, about 5 miles, you have to evacuate. And so we were just about to do the anthems and just about to start. And then everybody had to clear the stadium and wait for the lightning to pass. And yeah, and then it did get underway and it was fine. But our tie was quite one-sided, I think, similar to yours. We did get the two one-sided ties with very, very strong teams and some very inexperienced teams on the other side. So it was mine was USA against Austria, and USA did a clean sweep. They won 4-0. Didn't drop a set, actually.
Yeah, we had our colleagues working on Great Britain, France, who we thought may have actually slept in the commentary box because their tie was quite long. And ours, yeah, Spain, Mexico. Mexico, at home, they're a force. Altitude is their friend, and they knock people over with the results. You're like, oh, that was quite one-sided. Ah, it was in Mexico. But then we come down to southern Spain and the Spanish. Yeah, the Spanish were too good. So ours was quite straightforward on day one. Spain won the two matches. And I remember messaging you and you said, oh, how was your tie? I said, yeah, it was pretty good. Spain were too strong. And I said, how about yours? And you said, oh, there's rain or there's a delay. Oh, I think you said there's rain. I said, how bad? And you just wrote, they've evacuated the stadium. And I just was like, oh, that's not one you want to hear when you're kind of starting at 11 o'clock at night.
No, and they actually did quite well, to be fair, from the original start time on the hour, which would have been a bit later because of the anthems. The actual start time ended up only being about 40 minutes after that. So it really wasn't 45 minutes after that. So it really wasn't too bad at all, to be fair. They did quite well getting people in and out of the stadium. But yeah, no, Americans just way too strong. I mean, you've got Jesse Pegula, world number 3, Coco Gauff, world number 6. That's your singles lineup. And to be fair, they're one of the best doubles pairs in the world. So, yep. You know, you could do it all with two players. I mean, they're as far as I'm concerned, they're favourites to win the whole thing. But then they were one of the favourites last year and they didn't even reach the semis. So there you go. You never know with the Fed Cup or Billie Jean.
Well, you just never know. You know, by November, I mean, it was just brutal, wasn't it? They'd come off the back of the WTA finals in Houston, and there was just a lot of exhausted bodies who were. I mean, Iga Świątek. Remember, she said that she didn't feel her body would be right to switch from the surfaces, the time zones, the traveling. It was all just that's, you know, all those things that sort of come into the mix. And then what I love about the Billie Jean King Cup is you have those players that suddenly rise to the occasion. Those players that love a team event, they love that partisan crowd, say they're playing at home. And Storm Sanders, let's think of Storm Sanders. I'm not saying she doesn't do good things throughout the tour, but boy, did she step up. And that's what I love about a team competition. You get those, you don't necessarily have to be in the form of your life. Look, I thought Harriet Dart and Katie Bolt played really well, especially on day one against France, two players that didn't really have the form going into it. And they pushed them and it was tiebreak after tiebreak after tiebreak. And unfortunately for GB, you know, you've got Caroline Garcia, who's in the world's top 10. You've got Elise Cornet, who just, you know, I think she's one of those players I really wouldn't have, if I was a professional tennis player, I really wouldn't have wanted to face.
Yeah, she's a giant slayer, isn't she? That's what she does. She's got a very unassuming game style.
There's so much drama.
So much
I just
drama
don't think I could. Every time we had, I have to say, every now and then we had a little eye on what was happening in the GB of France tie. She just looked like she's about to cry, and it was very emotional. And I imagine if you're playing, I don't know, but you could tell me if you're playing against someone like that. I don't know, it's quite difficult to block it out, but B, it's quite exhausting when you're looking at this person, the other end of the court, and they're just going through every emotion under the sun.
Yeah, it is. It's exhausting. But then everybody knows what they're going to get when they play against her. And she's so animated. I think that's something. For me, it appeals. I've played against Elise a lot. I played against her in juniors and also in women's.
Was she always
well.
Like that?
Yeah.
Juniors, was she always like that?
Yeah, of course. She's just being herself. And, you know, and it's not necessarily directed down the other end. Sometimes it is. It's often directed at the umpires. It's mainly directed at herself. And I think it's just sort of what gets her animated. And also the drama that comes with her are the score lines. You know, she does not give up. And she has won from serious deficits over and over and over again. And she can, you know, steal things away. And you can sort of go, what on earth happened there? And because she doesn't really possess any big weapons, you also don't quite understand it. I mean, hasn't she beaten Serena 3 times? Twice when Serena was at number 1 in the world. Just, you know, it's absolutely phenomenal, some of the wins that she can pull out. And so she's quite deceptive. So I think that sort of adds to the drama, in that people don't quite get it, They don't quite get why she's able to pull out those results, because also she pulls out those results, but it's not like she's ever been a top 10 player. So she can't do it consistently. So it's yeah, there's just something about Cornet that is incredibly challenging to play against. And I do think that most players don't enjoy playing against her, and because you're never quite sure. But I think she's quite difficult to analyse, I think, from the sidelines, to figure out why. Why are people so uncomfortable playing against her?
There were some really, really strong teams in these qualifiers. Nine teams going through. And once the venue is confirmed, and there's a few rumours it could be Switzerland, who are the defending champions, then if that were the case, then there'd be a wild card floating around for someone. I don't know how that's decided. Normally it would be if the venue was in a country that hasn't qualified, they might give them the wild card. But if it's Switzerland, that'd be interesting to see where that goes to. So that will all fall into place in the goodness of time. Was that your first work back since the second little one? Was that your first?
Yeah, first couple of days.
And how did you find that, getting into work or getting the time to do the prep, to do the work? Because it's different when you go from one is a handful, two is more juggling.
Yeah, I think it was fine. It was nice. I was looking forward to it. It was nice to do something a bit different after a couple of months sort of at home. And yeah, it was just the 2 days. It was, I suppose, the prep was easy because you know the players. It's not like most tournaments where obviously there are 32 players and you're not going to prep all of them because you're only going to do two matches. So you have to wait for the schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
And the schedule often doesn't come out until late the night before. So then you are very limited on the amount of time you've got to actually prep. And if that is a time when you've got two kids and then it becomes difficult. But but so for Beijing King Cup, I mean, you know, 2 weeks before the event, you know, we know who's going, we know who's likely playing. So I sort of just was drip feeding it. I was each day just doing a little bit, just having a look at all the different players. And for me, a lot of it's about watching their most recent matches. So rewatching just to see the most recent form, because my job is on this tie was to be the analyst. So, you know, you need to know how they've been playing, how they're playing today relates to that form and all that sort of stuff. But it was fine actually, because I had a bit of a longer run into it, I suppose. So it was a good one to get started. And it's only 2 days because obviously most events are seven. So so it was ideal really. So did the couple of days and I'll be back for French Open, Wimbledon, and then back to normal really. So can't miss French or Wimbledon, not possible.
No, can't do. No, we're currently on the road to Roland Garros, aren't we? That's what they sort of call it, starting with Monte Carlo, and then off we go. So I don't know if this is too big a question to unpack, or maybe there isn't an answer. Great Britain did really well. They fought. They didn't have the best of form going in, but they really stood up to the French team. Couldn't make it across the finish line. Is there a worry for you where we're at with the British women, or do you think we're in a good place? And Jodie Burrage has been doing well recently. I mean, where are your kind of thoughts on GB?
Well, it was quite an extraordinary situation because Darton Bolter, being the GB 1 and 2 in that match, is what you would expect, but they are not the GB 1 and 2. At time of selection, it was Jodie Burrage and Katie Swan. But both very inexperienced when it comes to Billie Jean King Cup, of course. So what a tough decision for Captain Kyothavong to make, because Dart's been struggling with form this year. Bolter, you know, with her injuries as well. So, you know, they're, as I say, you've got two other players that are producing results more consistently, but it's not necessarily on the big stage. So Kyothavong went for experience over recent form, and you know, look, I wouldn't say that she was vindicated for that choice, because of course they didn't win, but they absolutely put in a fabulous showing, as you would expect them to. So you can't look at that and say that Kyothavong made the wrong decision. It's just a very interesting decision, especially to go with both experience. Sometimes people might sit a little bit more on the fence and go, well, let's take Burrage because she's the British number one and she's in the most form, and let's maybe take Dart for the experience. And then you've got those two.
Yeah.
And you've got a little bit of combination. But to go for both experience... Anyway, just a very interesting thing. So, no, I don't think that it's trouble. Of course, we don't have anyone in the top 100. So, well, apart from Raducanu, but she made herself unavailable for the tie. So I'm saying one and two. Two and three is what I mean. Two and three is what I mean. Sorry, Emma. We know we're big fans
of available of the available players. It was the one and two.
That's what I mean. She said she was unavailable. She was never going to play that tie, and that's it. And it's very close to Stuttgart, which is a tournament that she's always going to play, which is on clay. So maybe if there's a qualifier for us that's on clay, that she might be more into it. And I say she's always going to play Stuttgart. That's because of one of her main sponsors, Porsche. That's their tournament, and she sort of has to be there. I'm not particularly concerned. Of course, we've got Emma's starting to do a little bit better and get some more consistent results. I think you've got four players doing really well outside 100. Fran Jones just made the semi-finals in Bogota, you know, with a fantastic performance there. She played really, really well there. So, no, I think there's a lot of, there's a big pool of players. And that's what federations always look for. They want, you know, we need the volume, because then somebody's going to be able to push through and break through. So, you know, obviously Dart and Bolter have both been in the top 100. Can they have a bit of a resurgence? And then Swan, Burridge and Jones, you know, where does it stop, really? So, no, I think it's promising. You know, look, it's in my opinion, it's not where we should be. You know, we've got a Grand Slam. We have a huge amount of money in this country. You know, we're not a huge country like the States as well. So we can target the money. So I don't think it's very good in terms of what we should expect from ourselves, because I think we should hold ourselves to a high standard. But with the current crop of players, I think there's a lot of good stuff.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And you talk about volume, and if you get volume, you hope that one comes through. Also, if you have volume of a similar standard, they push each other. We've seen that most recently. Let's look at the American men, how they pushed each other. And with the Russians, we had that little triumvirate of Medvedev, Hashanov and Rublev. Good friends, travelled together. And Hashanov, as we've talked about, it was sort of Rublev initially, that quarterfinal US Open, then he had the injuries, then Hashanov for the Paris Masters, then Medvedev and getting to number one in Grand Slam. And now in a fitting week for us to return, when Andrei Rublev has won his first Masters 1000 title. And I don't think there's anybody out there in the world of tennis that is not happy for Andrei Rublev.
I know, it was so great, wasn't it? It was so emotional. And, you know, he speaks so emotionally about it. He's just so open, isn't he? He just says, he's just been desperate to win one of these things. He's saying how difficult it is. He's been knocking on the door for forever, it feels like. And to finally done that is, you know, that is huge. Hopefully he just sort of keeps going. But I mean, yeah, everybody likes him, really, don't they? I mean, he seems to not like himself. I think he's the only person who doesn't like Andrei Rublev when he's punching his strings and he's just berating himself constantly. Everybody just wants him to give himself a break. Maybe now he will. Maybe he'll go, okay, I can breathe. I've won Monte Carlo.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's going to be how it goes.
What do you think are your strengths? Don't think I have any. What do you think you have to work on? Everything. Do you have any belief? Not really. You're like, brilliant. Excellent. All right, then.
Are you as good as the best? No.
Yeah, no, not really. I'm just out here trying. What I thought was really nice is Stefanos Tsitsipas recently. So a while ago, he made a comment saying that Rublev has no real weapons. He's not going to hurt anyone. He's not really going to do anything. He's not going to get to that sort of pinnacle. And recently, he did an interview when he apologized. He said, I made some comments. It was after a loss. My head was another place. But he does have weapons and he can hurt people. And I thought that was, you might say it's quite easy to say after Rublev's now won a Masters. But I thought that was quite nice of Tsitsipas to sort of address that off his own back. Because it's something, isn't it, with Rublev that we've talked about. It's about the confidence. But a lot of people have said, yes, he's got a forehand that is frightening, but does he have the all-round game to win a Grand Slam and to be the very best?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's nice of Tsitsipas to apologise. I don't think he meant anything, you know, negative towards Rublev. He was obviously feeling very negative at the time of that interview. Yeah. But look, that's probably what he believes. That's the sort of language that coaches and players have all of the time. Before you go out on court, your coach will be saying to you, or his dad, or Patrick, or whoever it is, will be saying, look, you know he's got no weapons. There's nothing to be scared of. That's just the normal language that people use. And we heard it a lot with the on-court coaching for the WTA. And I think people were taking it really personally, and it's but you've got to take on this person in battle. You can't be going, oh well, we know his forehand's massive, so watch out. That is just not an appropriate way to prepare for a match. If you're someone like Tsitsipas, who has more weapons than he does, and somebody like Tsitsipas, he's taller, he's got more pop on a lot of his shots, you just sort of go, you've got a bigger game than him. You can get all over him. So as far as Tsitsipas is concerned, I'm sorry, but I sort of agree with him. If I was coaching Tsitsipas, I would have said exactly the same thing. Should he be saying it in a press conference? Probably not, because people can take things the wrong way. But he absolutely is just saying, it's like when Ostapenko said, you know, I should have won easier than I did. It's like, yeah, that's exactly what your coach would say to you when you walk off the court. And all the players know it, so no one takes it personally. Even players say it to each other. If you say, oh, you're playing this player, I'm playing against this player you played the other week, what do you think? They'll just go, oh, she can't move. It's obviously not true, but it's just how tennis players talk. So I don't really begrudge him that at all. But we absolutely love Rublev. And I want to give a big shout out to Cam Norrie, who knows his onions when it comes to tennis, because he said at the beginning of the year, you know, do you remember a couple of years ago when they did that tennis TV video and they said, who's going to have a breakthrough year? And he said, can I say myself?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And everyone was like, all right, Cam, you know, all right. And then he won Indian Wells. So he did. And then, so he turns out he knew. And they did the same video again at the beginning of this year. They said, who's going to win their first Masters event? And he said, Andre Rublev. Not the only one. Other people said, Medvedev said Andre Rublev as well. I mean, it's an obvious choice, I think. It's fair enough. And then they said, which one's he going to win? And he said, Monte Carlo.
Oh, wow.
So well played, Norrie.
Yeah, so we've just had the Grand National, which is a huge horse race in this country that people like, agree with or don't. But a lot of people bet on it or pick horses. We need to be asking Cam Norrie for some tips. Maybe he's going to be winning certain things if he's... And I think Medvedev, it's an obvious answer, because we've just seen that recently Andrei Rublev was made a godparent to Medvedev's little one.
So cute.
Which was I mean, wouldn't he be, Andrei Rublev, a fantastic godparent? Wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Because he's cool. He's fun. He's lovely. I think Hashanov was there. I'm not sure if he was a godparent or he was just present at the ceremony, but I'm pretty sure Rublev was made a godparent. I mean,
yeah.
100%. I think that's a great choice. Yeah. Great choice.
Oh, yeah. So good. But it is nice because they do genuinely get on really well. They are really good buddies. And, you know, Medvedev would be delighted for Rublev for winning that event. There's no sort of, oh, I could have won it. And Medvedev's won enough. It's easy to be delighted for people when you're that good. But, I think it's just because everyone knows Rublev, don't they? They all know how much he wants it, how hard he works, and how much he deserves it. And he's finally got it. And Monte Carlo's a good one to win.
Yeah, and as you say, hopefully it will instill a little bit more self-belief in him. I think it's going to take a while until maybe he truly, truly believes, but hopefully that will have, as you said, he's been working and trying for it for so long. But I think generally things, we didn't have Djokovic in America. We know the reasons why. He will be allowed into America by the time we get to the summer and the build-up to the US Open. We then saw Monte Carlo, the elbow had some strapping on it, which is not good because he's had elbow problems before. We've got Holger Rune, who I think, in terms of the young players coming through, I think he might be the best for the game, Rune.
Well, the combination of the three of them is quite spectacular, isn't it? Sinner, Alcaraz and Rune. It's quite... You've got all the boxes ticked because you've got, you know, the fire of Alcaraz and you've got the sort of the ice cool of Sinner and you've got the attitude of Rune. Like they just are. What a great trio. Sort of mirroring, obviously not in results, but sort of mirroring the big three that we've had, in that you had the fire of Nadal, you had the ice cool of Federer, and then you had this sort of incredible confidence and attitude from Djokovic to come and disrupt that. So, yeah, and it's not surprising to me that, you know, Nadal always took Alcaraz under his wing. Obviously, they're Spanish, but there's lots of similarities. And Djokovic has taken Rune under his wing, really, from by all accounts, and has mentored him a little bit as well. I mean, Fed's not around, so Yannick, you're on your own. But
he's got Darren Cahill. He's fine. He's got Darren Cahill in his camp. I think it's a really good person, a really good voice to have in there. And Holger Rune, he'll annoy crowds. He'll annoy his opponents. He obviously annoys his mum.
Just like Djokovic.
When he's sort of yelling at her. I mean, he's just that. He's the package, isn't he, Rune?
Oh, he is. There's so much to love about him as well. Like, he's a good kid. He's, like I say, kid. He's not that young. But, you know, he's a good person. But that's how he gets himself fired up on the court. And, you know, he is very young. And I think it's fascinating. I cannot wait for more Rune Sinner, Alcaraz. Rune, I can't wait for it. I think it's really exciting because, you know, Rune may not have the natural ability that Sinner and Alcaraz have, which is absolutely off the scale, but he's got the belief. You talk about Rublev. You can't buy it, you can't pick it up, can't make it up. He has the belief that he's as good as them. And he said,
bucket loads.
He said, like, we're going to be the next big three. It's going to be shared around, you know. Maybe he won't get as much as Alcaraz and Sinner, but he'll be in the mix, and good for him.
Well, remember a few years back, maybe a couple of years ago, when he had those weird little elastic band ponytail things? Remember those little tiny, like a hedgehog thing on his head? I only link that because that was the time when he was DMing Djokovic and Nadal and everyone on Instagram saying, can I practice with you? You know, this is the confidence this young guy has to sort of direct message the very best, saying, come on then, practice with me. I'm quite envious. I'm not someone who is overflowing with self-belief and confidence like that. And I'm, to a degree, I'm quite jealous of those characters. And I'm sure Andrei Rublev sometimes think, why can't I be like that to a degree? But I think it's fascinating. Also the number one battle, I think there's currently around 700 points splitting Djokovic and Alcaraz. And if Djokovic is a little bit bothered by that elbow, that's going to be really interesting. And I think it's also interesting on the women's side, because yes, Swiatek still does have quite a chunky lead now from Sabalenka, but Ongjabeur winning in Charleston, I thought was really good. And then we've got Barbora Krejcikova, really great to see. Because when you think, this is her first sort of full proper season now, especially on the clay, since she won Roland Garros. Because remember, after winning Roland Garros, doing the double, by the end of that year, she was broken. She was exhausted. I remember her coming through to the Billie Jean King Cup finals. And then she's been injured. And I just, it's really nice watching her and watching her playing again like she played when she won the French.
Yeah, and proving that it's not a fluke. Because I think a lot of people would have thought, well, maybe she's going to be an Ostapenko type of character. And look, I'm a massive Penko fan, and I don't think it was a fluke. I think that she's just been out in the wilderness for a while. I think that she can come back, and she is coming back pretty strong at the moment, is Ostapenko. But, you know, the immediate sort of after that, or a Raducanu, for example, we do see Grand Slam champions that are unable to continue at that level, but she's just not one of them. And talk about self-belief. Her level of self-belief is amazing. It was amazing, is amazing. She won that Grand Slam. When she won the French, everyone was surprised. Everybody through that tournament had picked multiple favourites to win, and every round it changed because they kept going out.
Yep.
You had to pick a new one. And no one ever picked Krejcikova to win. It was bonkers. But she just sort of stood there, took her applause and was like, yep, thanks very much. Of course I won a slam. What's wrong with you? You know, that was her sort of approach. And it's not a fluke. She's absolutely a world-class player. And I sort of think she's like the player's player, if you know what I mean. As in, everybody on tour is very envious of the way that she plays. It's silky smooth. It's so effortless, you know, all that stuff. And I think that she gets a lot more respect from players than she gets from maybe, I think, fans and people watching at home, which is not how it should be. I mean, you know, fans should appreciate it, but there is something. I mean, the way she plays is marvellous. It is fantastic. But as I say, I did hear quite a few people thinking that it was a bit of a rogue slam win. And I don't think that's the case. It was a breakthrough. That's what it was. It was her breakthrough to the top 10. And that really is where she belongs. As long as she's fit and healthy, she will be a top 10 player.
But isn't it nice to see you've got Krejcikova coming into form? Sabalenka has kept up the form from Australia at the start of the year. She's kept herself up there. Rybakina, again, is playing some great tennis that she was playing kind of pre-COVID. Everything shut down. She came back and then Wimbledon, and now she's picked it up again. I've enjoyed watching Belinda Bencic at the start of this year and some of the tennis she's playing. I'm really happy to see that Ons Jabeur is now fit and winning that title in Charleston. It just, yes, Świątek still has that lead at the top, and it's still quite a chunky lead. But I think it's really exciting in the women's game now, the players, and it's not just, we've got a lot of power players in. That's why I like to see Jabeur in the mix. But I know you could say, and people will be saying, yeah, but for years it's been the kind of, in the women's game, so many people can win and we never know. I just think in terms of the rivalries that are starting to build, I think, and I haven't even mentioned Pegula or Goff, but I think it's really exciting in the women's game.
Yeah, you got a whack Rybakina in there as well. I know she's not necessarily up there in ranking, but that's because she got no points for winning Wimbledon. But she's playing some sensational tennis as well, and it's going to be at the back end of tournaments. So, yeah, and I think it's the benefit of having so many years where it was quite spread around, is that you have so many players now that are really experienced, and they've been to Grand Slam semis and finals. They've been around. And, you know, probably the most inexperienced of the bunch is Jessie Pegula, who is just outrageously consistent, but she's just not been at the back end of those majors and winning those big, big, big tournaments. You know, she's always around. I think people are really expecting that from her, but that's a tough position to be in when you're performing week in, week out. And we have seen through history a lot of players be very, very strong on the WTA tour and it not necessarily come to fruition at the slams or even sometimes the big, big WTA events. So it'll be fascinating to see how Pegula goes because, you know, she's in her late 20s. You know, she's not fresh and young like a Coco Gauff, for example. A bit of a later breakthrough for her. But yeah, no, it's a really good bunch. And as I say, you've got the power of a couple of them like Sabalenka and Rybakina, which will cause Świątek a lot of problem. As we've seen. And then you've got the slightly different approaches of Świątek and Jabeur to add into the mix. So, you know, it's a nice bunch, really. It's look, every slam is going to be stick a pin in it, isn't it, really? Out of that section, I think.
Yeah. I don't know where I'm suddenly going to say, shall we make our Roland Garros predictions? But because it was just because last night, I was doing a few things for Radio Roland Garros and I was looking at the entry lists for, and I know it can change because people can get injured and form can happen and form can drop off, etc. And firstly, it was nice to see the likes of Elena Svitolina in on a protected ranking, and someone I was commentating on last weekend, Sara Cerebez Tormo, she's going to be in, she's using her protected ranking. So, and Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. I mean, we forget she was runner-up at Roland Garros. And then horrible injuries, but she's back in on a protected ranking. So it's really nice. And then on the men's side of things, who did I see? Kyle Edmund is in on his protected ranking.
Yes, Kyle.
Vesely's in. Delian's in on a protected ranking. I mean, it is...
people ranked like 110 in the world. There's so many protected rankings, they're never going to get in. Oh, so frustrating.
Okay, so you know what? We're not going to do our predictions now. Suddenly, as I was talking through
I can. Świątek and Djokovic, done.
No, that... You know what? I'm not going to give my predictions, so I don't know, but I'm not going to give either of those to win Roland Garros. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, that's fair enough. But I mean, look, it's still April, so things can change.
Well, one thing I do... This is my yearly question for those listening, for those playing tennis... For those people wanting to put on their clay shoes and get out there, what are the things they've got to keep in mind if they're heading onto a clay court maybe for the first time this year? What's going to hurt the next day? And what are a couple of pointers that they need to keep in mind with this surface?
Oh, on clay?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, well, your groin, for one, that's going to be...
Lovely.
They can get a tweak here on there when you're sliding around. There's a big difference between slipping and sliding. Sliding's deliberate, slipping is accidental. But everybody slips on the clay. And if you do slip, then it can be difficult. So you sort of need to wake up all of those little bits of your muscles in your legs and that sort of thing. Also, it's called the IT band, which runs on the outside of your legs, so sort of from your hip down to your knee, right on the outside, because when you're sliding, it takes a lot of strain there. That is, I can tell you, the worst thing to massage in the world. It is, everybody hates the IT bands. It's awful. And I mean, honestly, as in people will just go and have massages and just say, don't touch my IT band. It's just, they just let it get really tight. It is so, so painful to do. I think it's, for me, it was easily the worst. I think for a lot of people it is. Unless you've got an injury or something, then obviously that's going to be worse. But just generally, a fit and healthy body, those ITBs are brutal, particularly on the clay. So that'll be it. The ball's going to be up a bit higher, so your contact point's going to be a little bit higher. So that means you can come from underneath the ball more. You've got a little bit more time because it is coming higher, so you can get a bit more spin, a bit more work. You're going to be running wider, longer rallies. So yeah, get your runners on, get your grind out. You'll be a little bit further back on return, a little bit further back, which means you've got further to run. If they hit the ball cross court, you're going to be about a meter back. Or further back, maybe even more. So you're going to have wider to run to get the ball. So yeah, it's a real it's the work part of the season. It's enjoy suffering. That's it.
Oof. You know what? I think I'm going to stick to the hard course. I've actually more recently been playing paddle, and then I went back onto a tennis court, and I was kind of waiting for the ball to bounce off the wall at the back, and there wasn't a wall because it was a tennis court. So I'm just confusing myself. I'm mixing up the two sports, and although they're very similar, they're very different. And as I say, when I went, I think in one day I went from one to the other, and that didn't work out well at all. But yeah, I think my conclusion is I'm staying on the hard courts. But good luck to everyone going onto the clay. I'm really happy we're back from maternity leave, and we'll keep an eye on everything, and I look forward to chatting again next week.
Yes, can't wait.
Bye.